Hey, just a quick note before we get started. Since our last show investigating Winnie the Pooh's age, a couple of you have reached out with some alternative theories. And I just want you to know that we hear you.
I have to say that if you ever cared to reopen the case, I hope you would refer back to a movie titled The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. I think there you might find your answer to his age.
I get it. It's hard to let go of the idea that Winnie the Pooh is an elderly bear in a crop top. We also heard a lot about bear years and how that complicates the arithmetic, but we're sticking with age 4. Up next, Catherine fields a question from the ELT helpline.
Hi, this is Kayla. I'm calling from Utah, and I have a question about goosebumps. So when you're cold, you get goosebumps, but I've noticed that also other times you get goosebumps. Like I was at a concert. It was like a orchestra choir concert. And the music was really strong and powerful. And it made me feel good. And I got goosebumps. So why did it give me goosebumps?
Hi, this is Catherine calling from Every Little Thing.
Hi.
Is this Kaylin?
Yes.
Okay. So to answer your question, I'm actually going to start with a story.
Hello, this is Christian Karnbach.
The person who told me the story, his name is Christian Karnbach.
I grew up in a part of Germany which is close to Cologne, which is a very western part of western Germany.
Christian grew up when Germany was divided.
As the communist barrier between East and West Berlin grows higher and stronger, the more determined grows the will of those in the East to escape. Along the border, East Berliners are forced to...
He lived in the West, but his parents were refugees from the East, and they still had family in the East.
We sent parcels to them because they couldn't have things like, simple things like oranges or good jeans, yeah, for example.
You know, they missed these simple things that they couldn't get.
By the way, we would ask, why would we send them blue jeans? Can't they simply buy? And so by that way, we learned about their situations and we felt with them.
Christian's family on the other side was essentially trapped behind a militarized border.
The civilized world cried shame when East German guards shot a fleeing teenager and then left him to die. They removed his body, but they will never remove him.
But in 1989, things started to change.
So there is a situation I do not know whether you might know, but every German will know.
One of the first things that happens is Hungary takes down the electric fence on its border with Austria. And this was huge because it meant that East Germans who could get to Hungary now had a physical path through Austria to West Germany.
By allowing the East Germans passage to the West, Hungary has broken a 20-year-old agreement with its Warsaw Pact ally.
And it's this signal that the hard division between the East and the West is starting to break down. Tens of thousands of East Germans start traveling out of the country seeking asylum. And many thousands of those people try to get into embassies for West Germany. Mm-hmm. They go to Prague, they go to Budapest and Warsaw.
They had climbed the fence of the embassy of Germany in Prague.
So in Prague specifically, thousands of these people set up camp.
They camped on the territory of the German embassy there.
And they say, we're not leaving until we get safe passage to the West. We want to go there without being harmed. This goes on for weeks. The situation is getting untenable. And then there's a West German foreign minister named Hans-Dietrich Genscher, and he decides to try to find a way out for these East Germans. So he starts negotiating. He's having these talks.
Long talks with government of the German Democratic Republic, GDR, and he came there, and the situation is classic.
On the night of September 30th, 1989, Genscher arrives at the Prague embassy, and he's there to give a speech to the crowd. And it's actually caught on video. Somebody was videotaping at the time.
From a very distant view, everything is moving and it's dark. There is no light on him. And there is a balcony.
And he comes out on the balcony.
And you see people coming out.
And there are people like hanging out of the windows of the embassy, and there are people all over the grounds, and they're watching him. They're waiting to hear what's going to happen, if they're going to be able to leave. And he starts to speak.
And out of the dark, the person speaking is not in light. You won't see it. You just hear a sentence.
He says just this one line, and he gets cut off. He says, "We have come to tell you today that your departure..."
And there it stops. Because, sorry, tears are coming, I get goosebumps now. People were shouting happily, crying. They understood immediately that they were to be allowed to go to Western Germany. For German, it's a key scene of reunification, because it was for the first time that people could come, kind of refugees, without risk of being shot, they could come to Western Germany. I heard about this situation and I immediately understood this is the beginning of the end of this separation.
Wow. Yeah. Holy cow. Yeah, I just have like my hair on my arms just like all raised. That's crazy.
It happened to me too. And it happens to Christian Karnbach?
When I saw it, and whenever I see it again, I get goosebumps.
And the West German foreign minister Genscher, who was speaking there, he later did an interview about this. And he said, "Those few hours at the German embassy in Prague were some of the most moving I've ever experienced. We all had goosebumps."
Wow.
So the reason I'm telling you that story is because the guy who told it to me, Christian Karnbach, the guy who grew up kind of sending oranges and blue jeans to his family in East Germany, he's a scientist who studies goosebumps.
Wow. That is awesome. Wow. Wow.
Is that why you wanted to study goosebumps? Is the fact that you get goosebumps from that why you wanted to study it?
No, it's not so specific as that. I know it would be good for the podcast, yeah.
Anyway, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to him is because he has invented this device called the Goose Cam.
Okay.
It's basically a metal box that sits on the skin, and it shines a light on the skin from the side. It'll make like little shadows where the goosebumps are, so he can objectively measure when goosebumps are really happening on someone's skin or not.
Okay.
What are the things that we do not know about goosebumps from emotional experiences?
So that would be difficult because it would comprise nearly everything. Let's take it the opposite way. I tell you what we do know by now.
So here's what we know, and it's not much. Goosebumps start in the reward centers of our brain. And that's where like dopamine and other good feeling neurotransmitters occur. We know that then activates these very slow moving neurons.
It is correct to speak of chills running down the spine because these neurons are slow. And so indeed, the impulse from the brain takes a second or so until it arrives at the skin, and indeed the hairs would stand up.
So when you see something that gives you goosebumps, chemicals flood the brain. That sends these slow signals through the neurons running down your spine. That signal goes into these tiny muscles that flex around your hair follicles, and their only job is to lift the hair. And that's why you get this bump around the hair.
Chills running down your spine, like it's actually a real thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what's happening physically. But the question that you asked is, in part, why is this happening, right?
Right.
And that is not at all obvious.
Okay.
The Goose Cam has not revealed all of the secrets of why we get goosebumps from emotional experiences yet. But one thing that we do seem to know is that these particular types of goosebumps, they don't happen in purely positive or purely negative emotional situations. They actually usually happen when emotions are not simple, especially when a happy thing is happening in the context of a sad thing or vice versa.
Yeah, it may be. Let's take, for instance, the balcony scene in the Prague embassy. It's happy news. You can go to the western part, but it's in the context of something very sad. For 40 years, you couldn't.
Does this help explain your concert goosebumps at all?
Yeah, that makes sense, actually, because a lot of these songs were like they were religious songs, right? And obviously, there's always very mixed emotions when it comes to religion. Like, I'm Mormon, and I feel like my faith has been tested a lot lately. My parents have gotten a divorce, and that's been weird. Oh, kind of things that have come up from my past, the way that the church handled some of my trials when I was a teenager, things that I feel like they handled very wrong. And now that I'm a mother of two girls, I kind of like are thinking about again. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, that makes sense that within the context of that, like a moment of connection with these religious songs would be especially powerful.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to share with you one last thing that Christian said, because, you know, the thing that was really intriguing, I guess, to me was the fact that we seek out and enjoy these kinds of goosebumps, even though they often happen in these kind of sad moments.
Mm-hmm.
Why are goosebumps pleasurable?
Why do people watch tragedies? People do spend money for sad movies, and they read sad literature and so on. Why do they do that? So my philosophical view on it is we are looking for sense in our life. We want to understand why we are living on this planet, why we are doing these strange things that we are doing. And if we are looking for sense, it would be kind of making ourselves half blind if we wanted only to watch the happy scenes. Because life is complex.
Yeah, that totally makes sense to me.
So that's all I know about goosebumps.
Okay. I will never look at goosebumps the same.
Here's what's coming up after the break. Last week, we asked you, what is the strangest thing to give you goosebumps? And you all delivered. So get ready to explore some different subgenres of goosebumps, like the disgust goosebump, the creepy goosebump, the horse dancing goosebump. Hey, we're back. As you heard, very little is known about goosebumps. So we took matters into our own hands, and with your help, we conducted our own scientific study. It was a self-reported survey into the ELT helpline on unusual goosebump triggers.
The weirdest thing to give me the chills.
The weirdest thing that gives me goosebumps
is a picture of the planet Saturn.
Olives. Little rubber bandy koosh balls.
And I just wanted to report back on the findings. So our data set included 64 responses. And here's what I can tell you. 15% of you mentioned music.
Broadway shows.
About 10% of you mentioned
Cotton balls.
I hate that squeaky sound they make when you tear them apart. It just makes me want to barf.
Here was an interesting one. 5 of you mentioned tiny holes arranged in a pattern.
Lots of little
dots.
We also just got some really intriguing case studies, and we wanted to dive in for some more in-depth data gathering. Okay, on the line we have Sage from Portland.
Hello.
Sage, what gives you the chills?
Gumby.
May I go out and play?
All right, but put on your gumbometer and watch that you get neither too hot.
Say more.
He has those red eyes sometimes, and he does all these weird twists and turns.
It's so cold here. I'm getting stiff.
Kind of like people in horror film.
I can see that. Okay, we're on with Josh from Centennial.
Hi there.
What gives you the chills?
Either the practice or the idea or seeing someone else lick dry paper or wood.
I'm trying to think of where you might see this, and I'm imagining someone like wiping off their tongue with a paper napkin.
Yep, that's it.
Well, let's do an experiment. Hold on, we have some paper in the studio.
Can you hear me licking?
Oh, no, but I can imagine it. In my mind's eye, you're licking the paper, and my mirror neurons are firing.
Skylar from Madison, Wisconsin. What gives you the chills?
The sound of brooms on cement. Yeah, that does it. The hairs on my neck are standing up.
Lonnie from Newark, New York. What gives you the chills?
Handling raw honey, like with my bare hands in large quantities.
Is that a scenario you find yourself in often?
Yes. I work in a honey packing plant.
Lonnie, you work in a honey packing plant.
Yes.
And what gives you the chills is submerging your hands in large quantities of honey.
Yes, correct.
When do you have this opportunity? Is this like, I'm going to just, no one will see. I'm just going to quickly dunk it. No one will know.
No, anytime that I've done it, you know, I'm cleaning out a bucket that wasted honey was poured into or wiping it up with hot water and you just got to stick your hand in it.
Did you find out about this chills inducer after you started working at the honey plant? Or before?
After. No, yeah. I didn't start my job search with this in mind, no.
Let's go to Star from Coulomine, North Carolina. Hey, Star.
Hi, Flora. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Freezing. So ready for spring.
Same. Okay, so what is it that gives you the chills?
Dressage,
right? I know this as a competitive sport where a person rides around on a horse in an arena, like in tempo. Is that right?
That's correct. Right, correct. It's a symbiotic relationship between horse and rider, and when it is perfect and balanced and beautiful, it sends me over the edge.
With this amazing moving horse, Orleans Tatias.
I am covered in goosebumps talking about it. The very best part of the dressage test for me is their final salute. They sort of acknowledge what they've just experienced, and many times you'll see a rider just sort of throw their arms down around their horse's neck. It's like watching a bride walk down the aisle.
What a horse. What a performance.
I don't even know what's going on, and I'm getting goosebumps.
I think you don't even have to know what it is, and you know what it is.
Star, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It was a thrill.
Well, that concludes our Goosebump survey. Thank you to everyone who participated. By the way, when actual researchers need to give their subjects goosebumps, they play, and this is not a joke, this song. And we're never going to make it without you. So please give us a ring. We'll make all your questions be gone. The ELT helpline is always open, 347-464-9626.
Every Little Thing was produced by Flora Lichtman, Catherine Wells, Phoebe Flanagan, Zakia Gibbons, and Aaron Reese, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Ian Chillog is our consulting editor. Special thanks to Mitchell Culver and Carter Sage. Dara Hirsch mixed this episode. ELT wishes you many goosebumps, the kind you get from dipping your hand in a large vat of honey.